About a month ago, there was a pretty big upset in national politics.
It is easily the most shocking result of this political season.
A stunning defeat.
This is a seismic political upset. And
this was apparently a thesaurus-worthy upset, but we're talking about the race for the Democratic nomination in New York's 14th congressional district, which includes parts of Queens and the Bronx.
And in this primary, one of the most powerful Democrats in Congress is a guy named Joe Crowley. He lost to this first-time candidate, this woman who is virtually unknown.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a 28-year-old former bartender, community organizer, Bernie Sanders supporter, working-class New Yorker, as she calls herself, and Democratic socialist.
Specifically, Ocasio-Cortez is a member of an organization called the Democratic Socialists of America, or the DSA.
A few years ago, basically no one had ever heard of the DSA. Today, their membership is exploding. New chapters are popping up across the country, and so are Democratic Socialist candidates.
And so this got us wondering, who exactly are America's new socialists?
Hello and welcome to Planet Money. I'm Danielle Kurtzleben.
And I'm Kenny Malone. Today on the show, the Democratic Socialists of America. Who are they? What do they want? Where do they come from?
And how do you take an idea that was political poison for decades and relaunch it in today's chaotic political arena?
Spoiler alert, you do not include an armed uprising.
Not looking for violent revolution, if that's the question.
I guess it's maybe what I was asking.
The following message comes from our sponsor, Capital One. The CreditWise app from Capital One recently released three new features, including a social security number tracker, to help users quickly detect fraud for free. Here's head of CreditWise, Joe Whitchurch.
While identity fraud is intimidating and can sound really complex, a little bit of effort can go a long way in helping you understand if you've been a victim of identity fraud.
CreditWise is free for everyone, whether you're a Capital One customer or not. You can find CreditWise in your app or Play Store now.
There's a new way to hear Morning Edition, All Things Considered, and all your favorite programs. Just ask your smart device to play NPR. Listen to your local station anytime, like this. Hey, smart device, play NPR.
Okay, so let's get this out of the way. This is an episode about socialism, but we are not here to do an episode arguing over the merits of socialism. If you want to pick that fight, call your uncle or a political science student or whatever.
No, what we were interested in was just like the basics. For starters, who even are these Democratic Socialists of America? We figured we should probably go meet some of them.
Which is how I found myself at a bar in West Virginia. So it's a Saturday in early July. It's just before sunset. And I'm at a brewery near a town called Reevesville. It's not super hard to find the Democratic Socialists inside this bar. There's this guy, he's wearing a t-shirt. It says, "United we bargain, divided we beg."
There's also a young woman telling the story of how she was just at this anti-immigration protest and how she got arrested and how Susan Sarandon was there.
I didn't actually see her until they stood her up and arrested her and everybody.
This is a sort of socialist happy hour, a meetup of the local chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America, or the DSA.
The DSA is not a political party. It's a nonprofit group. It's got chapters all over the country. And that young woman talking about getting arrested, she co-founded this chapter in West Virginia.
Her name is Kelly Rose. She's 36 years old, probably.
I think I'm 36. I'm 36.
Now, Kelly is a registered independent, and she would bet that she's more religious than your average socialist.
I am a Christian. I might be the only one in our little chapter that is a Christian. Possibly my mother would want to debate me on this, but I think if anybody was ever a socialist, it was Jesus.
3 years ago, the DSA had only about 6,000 members across the country. That is fewer members than the American Racing Pigeon Union. That is my best sound I make, just,
nice.
Just so you know.
Socialism is a word that comes with a lot of baggage for a lot of Americans. It has these associations with the Cold War and communism and severe-looking totalitarian leaders. But it has been undergoing a sort of rehabilitation.
It arguably started with Bernie Sanders, who was on stage running for president, saying that he was a socialist. And Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's nomination last month got even more people talking about socialism.
In the last 3 years, membership in the Democratic Socialists of America has really grown. It's shot up by more than 600%. which is still only around 45,000 members.
Bernie Sanders, however, not one of those members. He does consider himself a democratic socialist ideologically, but he is not a dues-paying member of the DSA organization. And that is just fine by some of the DSA members here.
Bernie is definitely, there are some policies that I think he's been a little too soft on, a little too Democrat for me.
Joe Cernelli is a founding member of this chapter of the DSA.
The DSA prides itself on being a big socialist tent.
Yeah.
There are members who want a system that looks more like what Scandinavian countries have. That would be higher taxes to fund much more comprehensive government services, like the social safety net, things like that.
And then at the other end of the spectrum, you have members who think capitalism has completely failed. They think the whole system needs to be replaced, and Joe Cernelli is more towards that end.
You know, we don't just want to improve capitalism, we will ultimately want to, you know, get rid of it.
It can be really hard to nail down what exactly the DSA wants, because you've got all of these chapters everywhere, they all have different priorities, and those chapters themselves have members with different socialist ideas.
But there is a national headquarters of the DSA. It's 400 miles away from West Virginia, but luckily for us, it's only 3 train stops away from our office.
Hey. Maria?
Yes.
Great to meet you.
Maria Savart is the national director of the DSA. She's been a member since college in the 2000s.
Do you want to do like a tour of the offices?
Sure. We're in the nerve center of the American Socialist Movement. Democratic Socialists of America National Office.
If it sounds like Maria is smiling, it's because, on one hand, this probably is the epicenter of socialist activity right now, but there's not really too much going on in this office.
This office is teeny. It's got this dingy old carpet. There are pamphlets stacked against the wall. Fun fact, the Democratic Socialist headquarters, right next to Wall Street.
Is that a coincidence?
Well, you know, we like to be close to have an eye on them, but mostly it's because the rent's cheap.
The DSA is a nonprofit organization. People pay dues, they join local chapters because they believe in this unifying ideology.
When it comes right down to it, people need to be able to live a dignified life. That means there are certain things that should not be left up to the market.
In other words, socialism, which in any form has been a tough sell in the United States for a long time.
The DSA was founded in 1982. Ronald Reagan was the president. He was deregulating. He was turning the economy towards the free market.
Selling socialism at this point in the U.S., it was an uphill battle.
The organization, to be honest, did go through a period where we were less active. The membership shrank. Elected officials didn't want to be associated with us.
Through the 1980s, the 1990s, the 2000s, socialism was a dangerous political bomb to lob at one of your opponents. You could throw it, and your competition would have chaos on their hands.
We actually had, at one point, we tried to give a donation, and it was returned. Right.
Maria can't remember the exact details, but she thinks it was a state-level race in the 2000s. And the candidate was afraid of what might happen if they took this socialist money.
Their opponent might send out a mailer to everyone in their district with a picture of them next to authoritarian dictators from history and say they were all socialist and then have a picture of the candidate.
But of course, in the last 3 years, that has totally changed. And there are all of these little ways you can tell the DSA was not quite prepared for all of the attention.
For example, some of their old press releases have Maria's personal contact information. Now, that was fine when nobody was calling them or writing much about the DSA, but Maria says she's still dealing with all of the trouble that that caused.
Yes, I get hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of emails a day. It literally takes time just to forward them to the rest of the staff.
But the DSA is now on a lot of people's radar. And they would like to know, what exactly is the DSA's platform? And Maria tells us, well, we don't really have a platform per se.
But a year ago, the chapters did get together and they hammered out 3 big national priorities that they were all going to push for.
Number 1.
Winning Medicare for all.
Number 2.
Supporting workers and building stronger unions.
And number 3.
And electing Democratic Socialists to office at all levels of government.
All right, so we're going to look at each of these ideas really quickly, just to get a sense of what the DSA is thinking here.
First, Medicare for all. This term is getting thrown around a lot on the left these days, and basically the idea is to take Medicare, which is taxpayer-funded insurance for seniors, and give it to everyone else too. So, taxpayer-funded health insurance for everyone.
We don't want something that's a half measure. We want to get private industry totally out of the system. We just want to make sure everybody's in Everybody gets health care.
Now, this is something Bernie Sanders talked about a lot in his presidential campaign. And he got attacked for how much it could cost, which is a lot. Trillions and trillions of dollars.
Okay, the second thing the DSA is working on right now is electing more Democratic Socialist candidates.
So news outlets like us, we tend to focus on the socialist part of the DSA's name. But the word Democratic, it's in there too.
And what this means by and large is working within the existing political system, like, you know, democratically. But it's been 20 years since a member of the DSA was in a national seat. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, because of how New York politics works, is about as close to a sure thing as possible. And while she is the most prominent, there's a whole slate of other DSA politicians in smaller races.
A couple names you might hear. Julia Salazar. She's running for a state seat in New York. And then there's Sarah Innamorato in Pennsylvania. But so far, only 5 DSA-endorsed candidates have won primaries. 5 primary victories just isn't a lot in this country.
And the third and final priority for the DSA, unions, helping to empower workers.
So what that looks like is we show up on picket lines when workers are trying to form a union or negotiate a contract. If their unions are kind of sitting with their head in the sand and they're not really being effective at organizing their coworkers, we support members organizing their coworkers.
So those are the 3 priorities the DSA is working on right now. But if you look at the organization's literature, you realize that those things are not the goal. Like, they are just incremental steps towards a much more radical vision.
Take healthcare, for example. The group is pushing Medicare for All, which is a big thing. It's essentially socialized insurance. But the DSA would like to go even bigger. It would like to socialize all of medicine, like in the national health system in England, where being a doctor is a taxpayer-funded government job.
And take the DSA's focus on strengthening unions. Here is how Maria explains the bigger vision.
A great analogy is, you know, in a union, you might negotiate that you want, you know, let's say there's a loaf of bread. You're going to keep a quarter of the bread. Union negotiators might go to the bargaining table for a contract and say, we want 50% of the bread. Socialists would say, we want to own the bakery and run it in our own interests.
I love that this analogy is bread and not iPhones or prescription drugs, because it sounds like we are living in Les Mis.
I mean, do you hear the people sing, Kenny? I do.
Oh, all the time. The DSA is talking about a big idea from 170 years ago, from Karl Marx, the workers controlling the means of production.
Now, the DSA is a nonviolent organization. They're not advocating overthrowing the factory or the bakery. They're just starting small, by Marxist standards at least, by supporting unions.
And to be fair, the bakery owners are probably safe for now because there aren't really that many members of the DSA. Those 45,000 members would not even fill most football stadiums.
But the DSA, it knows that sometimes crazy ideas can take hold.
Case in point, while we were visiting the DSA national offices, Maria walked over to the bookshelf and pulled down this book.
That's like 6 inches by 4 inches, or
oh,
almost.
That is tiny.
Really old school.
They actually have 4 copies of this book. It is called The Other America.
It had its flaws, but it totally changed American history.
It was written in the 1960s by a guy named Michael Harrington, who also co-founded the DSA.
He argued that there was this invisible, impoverished class of people that no one was paying enough attention to.
The Other America was a big deal, and it had people talking about poverty in a new way, including President John F. Kennedy. The book reportedly helped inspire Kennedy to launch an assault on poverty that would lead to a slate of programs, including Medicare, which launched in 1965.
At the time, Medicare seemed to a lot of conservatives like this crazy extension of the government, pure socialism. And they weren't entirely wrong. Medicare is a form of socialized insurance.
And today, a lot of Americans take that for granted. They just see it as another government service. And so here we have this tiny book written in the 1960s by a democratic socialist that helped spark a real socialist program that 50 years later is really popular with a lot of Americans.
Support for Planet Money and the following message come from Wonder Capital, the easiest way to invest in large-scale solar energy projects across the U.S. You can earn up to 7.5% annually while helping to finance renewable energy projects at wondercapital.com/planetmoney.
I'm sure many of you have strong feelings about this episode. You can send those over to planetmoney@npr.org. Prayers for our intern who has to read all of those emails are also accepted.
Today's show was produced by Megan Kane. Our editor is Bryant Urstadt, and our supervising producer is Alex Goldmark. And my editor is Arnie Seipel. Thank you, Arnie, for letting me hang out with the Planet Money team to do this story.
And I can tell you, it is a joy spending time with Danielle Kurtzleben. And if you want to spend more time with her, you can hear her on NPR's Politics podcast. I'm Kenny Malone.
And I'm Danielle Kurtzleben.
Thanks for listening.